Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, we'll take a look at President Obama's UNGA address.
And if we cannot work together more effectively, we will all suffer the consequences.
An ambassador considers the U.S. and Russian positions on Syria. NASA announces a major science finding regarding exploration of Mars. And a former musician with the rock band The Eagles releases a new CD. It's coming up right here on The Voice of America. U.S. President Barack Obama has addressed the United Nations General Assembly by noting the many dangers on the world stage today.
Dangerous currents risk pulling us back into a darker, more disordered world. Today we see the collapse of strong men and fragile states breeding conflict and driving innocent men, women, and children across borders on an epic scale. Brutal networks of terror have stepped into the vacuum. Technologies that empower individuals are now also exploited by those who spread disinformation or suppress dissent or radicalize our youth. Global capital flows have powered growth and investment, but also increased risk of contagion, weakened the bargaining power of workers, and accelerated inequality.
The president asked, how should the UN respond to these threats?
I lead the strongest military that the world has ever known, and I will never hesitate to protect my country or our allies unilaterally and by force where necessary. But I stand before you today believing in my core that we, the nations of the world, cannot return to the old ways of conflict and coercion. We cannot look backwards. We live in an integrated world, one in which we all have a stake in each other's success. We cannot turn back those forces of integration. No nation in this assembly can insulate itself from the threat of terrorism or the risk of financial contagion, the flow of migrants, or the danger of a warming planet. The disorder we see is not driven solely by competition between nations or any single ideology. And if we cannot work together more effectively, we will all suffer the consequences.
U.S. President Barack Obama is speaking with Russian President Vladimir Putin today on the sidelines of the U.N. General Assembly. Both Ukraine and Syria are expected to dominate their talks. U.S. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter says it is unclear whether the United States can find a way to cooperate with Russia on the crisis in Syria. While the two countries both desire the Islamic State's defeat, Carter said the U.S. cannot work with Russia if it indiscriminately fires on enemies of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. International Edition's Mohammed El-Shanawi spoke about the issue with Ambassador Alberto Fernandez, former director of the State Department's Strategic Counterterrorism Communication Center. Welcome, Mohammed. Say, what could President Obama gain from discussing the Syrian situation with the Russian president?
Well, no one can expect that the mounting misunderstanding between the two leaders about Syria could be resolved in just one meeting. However, President Obama will try to get clarifications with regard to the Russian intentions in Syria. Speaking about intentions, Ambassador Fernandez offered his own explanation of the Russian intentions behind hinting that Russia might join the international campaign against the Islamic State group if the Syrian government is allowed to join.
I think what it means is the Russians are playing a high-stakes game, trying to leverage their support for the survival of the Assad regime with something that they know that parts of the international community, including the United States, want, which is a stronger military effort against ISIS. So that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to say, if you want ISIS to be defeated, the price of it is the survival of Assad.
So are there any options available to the U.S. to counter the heavy Russian support for the Syrian president?
Ambassador Alberto Fernandez argued also that there were many options, but the Obama administration opted to abdicate U.S. power in the region over the past 4 years, so now it has no real great options. Ambassador Fernandez explained why the U.S. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter says it is unclear whether the United States can find a way to cooperate with Russia on the crisis in Syria.
Well, the reason he says that is because the U.S. government, of course, is in a difficult position rhetorically. The U.S. government has called on Assad to have no future in Syria. And here is the Russian government and other governments basically saying that we need to support the Syrian regime in order to get a larger solution to the to the problem of Syria. So the administration is basically in a difficult position because of past statements on this issue.
What is complicating the situation right now is the rapid Russian military buildup in Syria that could boost Assad's regime.
Thank you, Mohammed, for bringing this insight.
Thank you, Sue, for having me.
Joining me here in the studio is reporter Andrew Palchevsky with a look at what is being said today in social media about what's going on at the UN. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be here. So what we see trending with the UN, hashtag UNGA, or UNGA, as it's known, is trending and has been trending throughout the day. And what we see is world leaders' names kind of come and go, and they float to the top when they're speaking. So we saw President Obama, you know, was trending, and then President Putin was trending, and President Rouhani from Iran is trending now that he's speaking. So we see a lot of those names kind of come and go. And so those moments and what they talk about kind of become the trending topics as they're up there at the dais. But some of the big issues across the board that people are talking about are, of course, global terror and security. A lot of talk about ISIS, about the situation in Syria and the fighting there. A lot about political repression. President Obama touched on that, touched on the U.S. as a global leader and working together diplomatically with other countries. So a lot of these issues people touching on social media, and a lot of praise for them thus far.
Can I ask you a little question? You might not know the answer to this, so if you don't, that's fine. But
I hope I do.
I do too. I don't mean to embarrass you, but who are sending most of these tweets? Are most of them official government UN or government tweets, or are they mostly just people out there?
It's a mix. It's, I mean, we have people, our own Margaret Bashir, our UN correspondent, and Aru Pandey, our
White
House
correspondent. She's a good one to follow, by the way.
They're both excellent people to follow. You can find them on Twitter. I was actually on the Voice of America Twitter account just retweeting them because they were sitting there typing away as they were in the main hall watching these speeches go on, hitting some of the key points. You have journalists, you have the official, you know, countries, and the UN itself is tweeting out some of these things. And then people are just reacting. You kind of, social media is this big town hall, virtual town hall, where people can kind of voice their opinions and concerns and say, well, they didn't touch on this, or I wish you would have talked more about environment, or I wish you would have talked more about this or that. So it's kind of a mix of all of them together. And that's kind of how these topics become trending, is that through the collective tweeting and talking about all these things, they kind of bubble up.
Well, something else that's really exciting today is what's going on with NASA. We're just about to have a report on that coming up a little later in the show. But you said it was popular today on tweet?
Absolutely. Hashtag Mars announcement was popular. Mars was trending. Even Marte, which is the Spanish word for Mars, was actually one of the top trending global topics as well. So just people thrilled the announcement that they found some kind of salt water reserves on Mars. People are saying how long until they bottle it and sell it. So people are already wondering, or how long until we can send people up there now that we found water.
And are they going to find pepper now that they found the salt?
Right, exactly. So there's a lot of jokes about that, but generally people saying it's very cool. And NASA, to their credit, their Twitter account has been, they've had quite a past 24 hours. First, we had the super blood moon, the super moon and the lunar eclipse that was last night into early this morning around the world. And now this announcement about Mars. So they've had quite a lot to do. And
their fingers must be tired.
Absolutely. And they're getting a great social media response. I think it was 22,000 retweets last I checked on their tweet about this Mars discovery. So they're having a banner day on social media.
Great. Well, thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Most people agree that there's something special about a baby smile. A new study finds that babies smile to get you to smile back, and they know exactly when to do it. The researchers found that, like successful comedians, babies have a great sense of timing, knowing just when to flash their smile to get a reaction from an adult. The research team, which included computer scientists, roboticists, and developmental psychologists, studied one-on-one interactions between mothers and their under 4-month-old children. Based on their observations, the researchers were able to program a childlike robot to smile at strategic intervals just like babies do. Then they had the robots interact with college student volunteers and found that the robot babies were just as successful as real babies in getting adults to smile. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The Pope is back in Rome after his historic visit to the United States. My colleague Victor Beatty is following all this. Victor, welcome.
Oh, hello, Susan. Pope Francis ended a historic 10-day trip to Cuba and the United States with an open-air mass Sunday in the U.S. city of Philadelphia that drew more than a million people. Although he met with Cuba's leaders, President Obama addressed a joint meeting of the U.S. Congress and led a multi-faith prayer for world peace in New York, Catholic University of America theology professor Chad Pecknold told me the Pope will remember his encounters with ordinary people.
I think he loved being with the children in Harlem. I know that in D.C. he loved visiting the Little Sisters of the Poor. In Philadelphia, he also seemed to enjoy interacting and blessing babies in the street and those who were infirm. Those are the interactions that he likes the best. He doesn't want to have any distance between him and the people, and I think that love is evident and it's definitely been returned.
What were the messages that he delivered in Cuba and the U.S.?
He had four main themes. The importance of the migrant, he announced frequently, I am the son of immigrants. The importance of the family, he repeatedly told us that he was here for this explicit purpose of lifting up the beauty of the family. And notably, he talked about on his last day here in Philadelphia about lifting up and proposing the covenant of man and woman as a gift to all the families of the world. The cause of religious freedom was a theme in every location that he went to, not only the address at Independence Hall, but throughout his time, even at the White House and in Congress and in the UN, where he stressed rule of law, the theme of religious liberty came up and being a beacon to the world, that America should be a beacon of religious liberty for the whole world. And then, of course, care for creation. This was a strong theme of his encyclical on our common home, Laudato Si, and it came out here again, the need to pay attention to a sustainable, integral development for the whole world, a world that we are entrusted with its care, and as its stewards, he calls us to be caretakers of nature and caretakers of all of nature, and that even nature has a right, he says, and that the right of nature is derived from its reciprocal relationship with the human person and the whole human family.
Well, to say the least, he was well received.
He was indeed. And a kind of exuberance that the whole country, I think, felt, and not only the whole country, but the whole world watched. His first trip to the United States, and it seems like we didn't get to keep him, but he certainly feels like an honorary citizen now.
What was he able to accomplish in Philadelphia with that mass crowd that turned out this world meeting of families?
Well, so many people worried that the high security level was going to keep people away. Well, that sure didn't happen. Mayor Nutter did a good job, I think, of assuaging fears that everyone would still come despite the crowds. It was an extraordinary thing to see a million people at a mass, and the Pope was in his element. You can tell that he loves to be with the crowd, and I think that galvanizing sense was good for the church, too, that the whole country looked warmly upon not only Pope Francis, but the whole Catholic Church, and that was a welcome thing.
Pecknold says the Pope's trip underscored two visions, one that we are part of one human family and that we should strive toward peace and harmony in the world, and the second, the Church is an enduring institution because it brings hope and mercy to that world.
Thank you very much, Victor.
All right, Susan.
Coming up on International Edition, NASA finds something new in its search on Mars, and musician Don Henley returns to his roots. NASA has announced what has been billed as a major science finding regarding its ongoing exploration of Mars. The build-up to the event has been quite a mystery, and joining me to solve it is reporter Victoria Mackey. Welcome, Victoria.
Thanks for having me.
Well, what's this all about?
So what NASA is telling us today is that they found what they're calling recurring slope lineae. Now, really what this means is that they've got really strong evidence from what they're saying that there is some sort of water flow on Mars. Now, before we, you know, NASA knew that there was frozen water on Mars, but this shows that there could actually be what they say is very salty, briny water actually flowing, perhaps during summer, on the planet.
But not actually like a creek or anything, more like a salt flow, a wet salt flow.
Right, correct. Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, they've repeated it every single time they've answered questions about it. Very salty, lots of minerals. And it doesn't mean that they've got any indication of life so far, but this, you know, leads them to wonder, you know, could there have been and is there now anything else?
Yeah, it opens up the possibility that maybe once upon a time there was water on there and that could have supported life. And if there is still water there, say under the surface, then that opens up the possibility of having a human activity on Mars, maybe a settlement of some sort.
Sure. And what they're saying is, you know, at least this gives them a good indication of where to look. You know, there's a few more missions planned between now and, you know, 2020. So this really kind of points them in the right direction for where they can start searching, you know, on the ground Mars for forms of life.
This takes baby steps to find out anything. It's so far away, people don't realize how difficult it is to even find this much.
Right. And I mean, they're really planning. I mean, the planning for these scientists is years and decades down the line. I mean, it moves incrementally, slowly. But these guys, you see them right now, they're so, so excited about this finding. I mean, they're just overjoyed with just this little bit of new knowledge.
How did they find it? Was it the rover?
It was. It's the rover that's been running around up there since 2006.
I wouldn't say run, but
well, right. Rolling it's been rolling around there since 2006.
And how much longer is that rover going to last? It's been there a while.
I'm not sure how long it's going to be up there, but there are plans. I believe there's a Russian exploration device going up at some point, and then NASA's got another one going up in 2020 is what these guys are saying.
So we have a lot more to watch for.
Yeah, it'll be a while, though. I feel like you said, this goes very, very slowly.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Victoria, for stopping by our studio and talking to us about this.
Thanks a lot for having me.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sagan, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day, wherever the news may be. Our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Singer Don Henley has returned to his country roots with a new CD, Cass County. As International Edition's David Byrd found out, Henley gets some high-profile help in a mix of new songs and some of the hurting tunes that formed his musical soul in East Texas.
Take a picture of this. This is me leaving. Take a picture of this. This is me walking away.
Don Henley is best known as the drummer and co-founder of the Eagles. But his solo albums, including Building the Perfect Beast, The End of the Innocents, and Inside Job, have added platinum records to his collection as well. On Cass County, Henley returns to his roots with rich lyrics and musicianship that break the modern country mold. He gets some help from the likes of Martina McBride, Miranda Lambert, Merle Haggard, Trisha Yearwood, Vince Gill, Dolly Parton, and Mick Jagger. The 68-year-old musician says that picking the right blend of voices was very much like casting a movie.
You know, and I was extremely fortunate in that nobody turned me down. You know, I was really delighted when Merle Haggard said yes, and when Mick Jagger said yes, and Dolly Parton, and all of them, you know.
Yeah, you can get burned.
finally released the first single off the album, That Old Flame, a duet with Martina McBride, to iTunes. The song speaks of two lovers who have rediscovered one another after several years, with the songwriter asking his one-time flame if it's him she misses or just her long-lost youth. Henley also has several covers that hearken to his youth in Linden, Texas, a town of 2,400 near the Arkansas and Louisiana borders. They include Jesse Winchester's The Brand New Tennessee Waltz, Jesse Lee Kincaid's 1966 single, She Sang Hymns Out of Tune, and the Louvin Brothers' 1955 hit, When I Stop Dreaming, a duet with Dolly Parton. Henley says that recording with Parton was a special treat, even though the version of the song they did was higher than her comfort range.
She did a couple of takes, and she came back in the control room. She said, well, that key is a little high for me. I said, well, I'm sorry, that's just the key we've recorded in. She said, well, I'll just have to rear back and get it. And about two takes later, she had reared back and got it.
Don Henley also covers Tiff Merritt's Bramble Rose with a little help from Miranda Lambert and Mick Jagger. Henley says that Jagger added just the right element to the song.
I was so thrilled and delighted when he agreed to do it. And the bonus about that is that he played that killer harmonica part, which I never would have thought of. It didn't occur to me at all, and I forgot what a great harp player he is. And it really added another texture and another color and a whole other dimension to the song.
Don Henley says he included the covers because he believes that music is getting away from its roots, and not just country music, but all genres. Authenticity is something the singer says he isn't hearing much right now, but fans can hear it from him on Cass County. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Thanks for joining us for International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
South Sudan, the world's newest country and one of its least developed, faces many humanitarian challenges. Today, it suffers in the world's worst food security crisis, one caused primarily by man-made violence. More than two decades of North-South conflict, followed by factional fighting that erupted almost 2 years ago, have further weakened an already fragile nation and undermined its ability to protect and feed its people. The South Sudanese conflict has been particularly difficult on the civilian population. Thousands of people have been killed and more than 2.2 million driven from their homes. More than 600,000 have fled to neighboring states. Nearly 4.6 million, or 40% of the population, face acute hunger, particularly those living in the most conflict-affected areas of Unity, Upper Nile, and Jonglei states. Still, there is hope. In late August, the heads of the two warring parties signed a peace agreement that could bring an end to the fighting and set the country on a road to recovery. In view of this positive development, the United States has announced an additional $80 million in humanitarian assistance for the people of South Sudan, specifically aimed at helping South Sudanese refugees. This brings the total U.S. assistance since the start of the conflict to over $1.3 billion. The funding will aid those most in need, including internally displaced persons, refugees seeking asylum in South Sudan, and those South Sudanese who are living as refugees in neighboring nations. The United States urges all signatories of the peace agreement to uphold their obligations to the people of South Sudan and to allow immediate, full, and unconditional humanitarian access to all populations in need in all areas of South Sudan. They must also ensure the safety and security of civilians, humanitarian workers, and humanitarian supplies. There is a long road ahead, and this is the first step.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials.